You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang. Hey,
this is Mr. Cripples, a.k.a. the Cat Smasher.
Hey, this is John the Natural Alessio.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Hey guys, this is the Big Frog, Jeff Curran.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald.
Hi, this is Ivan Salvey.
Hey everybody, this is Joe Peltier, Jay Dirksen.
Hey, it's Mark Machine Hunting here.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Guapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Thank you for tuning in to yet another edition of Full Contact Fighter Radio. I am your host, Kelsey Mullen, coming to you back in Vancouver, British Columbia, after a long extended stay in Edmonton with my co-host, Brendan. Brendan, how are you doing?
I'm good, Kelsey.
I guess long extended stay is maybe an exaggeration. It was a few days, and I got sick while I was in your fair weather town.
So you can't even, you can't even deal with sub-zero temperatures for a day. A single day without getting sick.
I was there for like 4 days, man. 4 days.
What Kelsey really means is that he forgot his patchouli supply, and they didn't have any organic fair trade patchouli here in Edmonton, so.
Yeah.
Hence his lapse into dire illness.
Well, it's probably because my diet had to be only Ryan Coke and steak while I was in Alberta, so. Apparently people out there haven't heard of vegetables. That's probably why I got sick.
Isn't bison a vegetable?
Yeah, in your province it is. But anyways, thanks to everyone out in Edmonton. I had a good time covering the fights out there for the MFC, and thank you, Brendan, for your hospitality. It's very nice of you, buddy.
My pleasure.
We've got an interesting show today. We've got a couple UFC middleweights coming on the program. Patrick Cote is going to be on the show discussing his recent win over Scott Smith, and then we've also got Nate Marquardt on the program, who had the big win over Dean Lister recently. And Brendan, I think especially in the case of Nathan Marquardt, his win probably will get him within, maybe not a title shot right away, but within striking distance of a title shot, you would think?
I would think the only thing that would be preventing that would be some more exposure on television.
Yeah. And as well, I think it depends. There's a great deal depends on what happens, I think, with Rich Franklin and Jason McDonald, and I guess we can discuss that at the end of the show, but I think there's a lot riding on that, and as well, Mike Swick, who has been really gunning for a title shot as well, he's fighting Yushin Nakami, so it looks like, so that fight as well, I think, will have a lot of bearing on what happens with Nate Marquardt versus Anderson Silva. And, you got nothing to say about that?
This is the intro, man. We're not supposed to be talking about stuff like this. These are musings and meanderings. You're confusing me.
Sorry about it.
Your typical two sentence intro is has conditioned me not to pay attention to you after those two sentences.
Well, it's just because
something like, so I got a big show. Let's get on with it. This is Full Contact Fighter Radio.
I'm just heavily dosed on cold medicine right now, so probably a little out of it.
Great.
Well, on that note. Stay tuned, you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
A person who gets punched in the face for a living doesn't know what fear is. Pain doesn't exist if you train more than 30 hours a week. Someone who fights with broken bones has a totally different definition of agony. Bodog Fight mixed martial artists know that fear, pain, and agony won't last. But the glory of having your hand raised at the end of the fight, that lasts forever. Bodog Fight, St. Petersburg. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. Check your local listings or visit BodogFight.com for details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight shorts, camouflage board shorts, corduroy and camo hats, hooded sweatshirts, to the classic FCF t-shirts, Full Contact Fighter clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF sticker and banner shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Full Contact Fighter.
The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now is the Predator, Mr. Patrick Cote, fresh off his big win over Scott Smith this past weekend at UFC 67. Patrick, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. I'm very good. Thank you.
Patrick, congratulations on the win, first off. You know, I gotta admit to you that I don't know if you probably didn't hear our show, but I honestly thought Scott was going to give you some trouble, Patrick. I thought his stand-up might be a bit better than yours, and I thought you would have to get the fight to the ground, but you proved on Saturday night that that wasn't the case. Was that your game plan going in all the way, Patrick? You were content to try to stand with Scott?
Yeah, you know, I follow my game plan perfectly, you know. You know, I went to Boston to improve my Muay Thai skill, and, you know, in this fight, I showed to everybody now what kind of a fighter am I, you know. You know, I'm more dangerous on stand-up now with the kick and elbow, and, you know, my wrestling are better now, too. So, yeah, it was my game plan, and I won because I think then I follow my game plan. You know, I just, even when I rock him, I was staying in my game plan, so...
So can you tell us a little bit more about what exactly was your game plan? How did you see this fight playing out?
I wanted to stay on my feet for sure, to use the leg kick a lot and stuff like that. But, you know, I wanted to shoot him at the end of each round to try to take him down. But, you know, this guy is a good wrestler and he's very strong. So I wasn't able to take him down because I wanted to finish each round very, very... hard with the takedown, but I wasn't able, so I stay on my feet, and I think I did a pretty good job on my feet.
Now, you mentioned, Patrick, that you kind of rocked him there and earlier in the fight, and it looked like he was in a lot of trouble, and then in your post-fight interview with Rogan, you made mention of the fact that, you know, he played posse somewhat against Pete Sell and sort of feigned that he was hurt more than he was, or maybe not. What was it from your point of view, Patrick? Were his eyes pretty clear? Did you not think he was seriously hurt, or why didn't you follow him up?
You know, I knew that he was rock, you know, and he told me that he was rock after the fight too. The thing is, you know, my game plan was to stay. I wanted to stay patient, stuff like that. But I don't know, maybe it was a mistake by myself. But you know, the most important thing for this fight is to have the victory for me because. You know, I was needed this victory a lot for to stay in the UFC because it was probably my last chance, you know, to prove myself in this organization. So, and you know, I know this guy a lot. You know, we did the sparring maybe 100 times when we were in the house for the Ultimate Fighter 4. So, I know then, you know, I knew then even if it's rock, you know, he can land a big right hand like he did against Pete Sell. So, I stay more in my game plan for this kind of the situation.
Mm-hmm. So your plan basically was to win the fight. Period. Whatever it took. That was your goal, to win the fight.
Yeah, for sure. It was the first. You know, I always give a good show, but this time it was about time. You know, to win finally in the UFC. You know, so the win was more important for me this time than the show.
Yeah, and Patrick, obviously there were some boos in the crowd and during your interview with Rogan, and it wasn't just your fight, Patrick. I think that card.
Yeah, I think every fight got booed.
Yeah, there was
every fight. You know, even the final, even Rampage. So it was a little bit crazy, you know. And I watched my fight this morning, and you know, I said that fuck. Yeah, I don't think it was a bad fight. I think it was a very technical fight, but you know, for sure, sometimes the people want to see a more exchange, toe to toe, something like that. But you know, if you are smart, the most important thing is staying in your game plan and win the fight. So you know, this is my job. So this is my full time job. So I need to win to make money and something like that. Sometimes you have to think about yourself too.
Yeah. Well,
Patrick, have you seen? You said that you were a little bit apprehensive. You thought he was rocked, but he may have been not as rocked as he thought. Have you noticed, and have you in discussions with other fighters, is that an actual technique now or a trick when you get hit to pretend you're a little bit wobbly to get the person coming in haphazardly?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't use this technique, you know, because it's not you're not look great in front of the judge, you know. But you know, maybe some guy tried to use this technique, but you know, it's not. I don't like that. You know, I prefer to stay on my feet and just to take that punch and just like nothing. You know, so.
Well, yeah, and I mean that must, I guess, somewhat bother you, or maybe it doesn't. Just the fact that people are looking at more. So, you know, why didn't you finish the fight? Or people were booing when in fact like you mentioned, I mean, you showed a whole other skill set, Patrick, improved stand-up skills. You showed people that you were capable of standing and exchanging with a noted striker like Scott Smith. Does that is that what you want, you kind of wish the fans would more so concentrate on?
Pardon me? Sorry?
Well, just the fact that you mentioned that you demonstrated some improved stand-up skills taking on a noted striker like Scott Smith. Do you sort of wish that the fans concentrated on that more and gave you respect for that?
Yeah, you know, I was, like I said at the end, you know, you can't boo me, but, you know, I won the fight and it was the most important thing. So it's not a nice moment, you know, when the crowd boo you, but, you know, sometimes you have to focus more on the win. Yeah.
Patrick, in your fight against Luter, obviously you came away with that. You came away from that fight with some deep regrets, obviously regretting the loss. But when you lose like that on the ground, were you apprehensive again then? You know, you always had great confidence. You seemed in the last year to have more and more confidence in your jiu-jitsu. Did you lose a bit of confidence in your jiu-jitsu after that, or have you recovered from that fight mentally?
No, you know, I knew that you know, Travis made a good job, but I did a mistake, you know, too. So you know, it was, and you have to understand, and Travis is not you know, I'm just another black belt. His jiu-jitsu is very, very sick. So you know, I knew that this guy is very, very good on the ground, but you know, it was more you know, I lost in this. I lost by submission, and he said in the pre-fight interview that he wanted to stay to doing that and take down and submission right after that. So that's why I took the loss very hard, because it was just you know, I lost like that, and I was training myself especially for this situation. But I lost with the situation for that. It was a hard loss for me, but. You know, my mind is my number one skill, so I just get back on my feet very quickly and just going back.
Was your mistake you referred to going for that Kimura when you didn't have full guard?
No, I was in half guard.
Yeah, half guard. That was the mistake, though, going for the Kimura and half guard.
No. It was a good reflex, but you know, I was maybe more too patient for this technique, and you know, maybe my confidence, you know, to pass a Kimura against a black belt was not very high. But you know, at this time, you know, my jiu-jitsu was great, but you know, I tried to be better and better each time I train jiu-jitsu and something like that. So I'm more well-rounded than before, but you know, I try to improve my jiu-jitsu a lot. In this couple of months for my next fight.
Now, Patrick, you mentioned how important this fight was for you to win. Have you had any discussions at all as far as the future, as far as a future contract with the UFC, and who they might want to put you up against?
I don't know. You know, I still have a contract with the UFC, but it seemed like then the crowd and even Dana White was not liking my fight. So I don't know. I don't know. I think that the fight was not 100% good, but it was not bad too. It was, you know, they had a good exchange and like that. So I don't know. You know, I still have a contract with the UFC, so my manager will going to do his job, and I will probably fight my next fight in the UFC.
I wanted to ask you as well, Patrick, because Brendan and I were discussing this, and we kind of thought to ourselves, you know, next time we talk to you, we should ask you, what are your thoughts on the success of Jason McDonald? It's somewhat that, you know, it seems like he's got the MMA world on fire, and everyone's really anticipating his upcoming fight with Rich Franklin. And sometimes I think people might not realize that you defeated Jason McDonald last year.
Yeah.
So what's that like for you, Patrick, to see Jason go on and get a shot against the former champion Franklin, knowing that you did beat him just over a year ago?
Yeah, I have no problem with that. You know, I'm very happy for Jason. You know, Jason came at Montreal to train with us when he fought Ed Herman.
Right.
So we became a friend. And you know, I'm very happy for him. You know, he's a great fighter, and he's a good nice guy too. So, and it's good for the Canada too. You know, it's good for the Canada, the MMA. You know, for Canada, because here the sport is not popular like in the USA. So, no, it's just good to have another Canadian in the UFC who has success.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what do you think Jason has to do to beat Rich, Patrick?
know, you know, that will be the, that will be a hard fight, even for Rich Franklin too. You know, Jason is a very tough dude. I think that, I don't know, you know, Jason on the ground is, I think his ground game is very, underestimated, even if he won, by submission his two fights in the UFC. I think he is better than that. So that would be a good fight if he is able to stay on top against Rich on the ground. I think he can win the fight by submission, even if he's on his back. But you know, his stand up is okay, but he's a little bit slow. So I give the stand up to Rich. But you know, if Jason is able to take the fight on the ground, that would be a dangerous situation for Rich for sure. Mm.
Patrick, tell us a little bit more about your training in Boston. Who exactly were you training with in Boston?
I trained with Sidio Tong Camp, with Mark De La Grode. You know, Mark was the coach in the Dreamweight Fighter 4. So I went there because I knew that my fight against Scott, you know, it was a stand-up war or something like that. So I wanted to improve my stand-up game. I trained there with Kenny Florian, with Jorge Rivera. So it was a very, very good training camp for me.
And one other question I wanted to, since you've gone south training now, have you considered following Jorge St. Pierre and Jason McDonald to New Mexico?
I don't know. You know, I went in the other camp for the first time for this fight. You know, I went in Sitio Tong, and, you know, I like this kind of training at Sitio Tong. You know, there's a lot of good people. There's a BTT Canada in Boston too. So I can train there, and you know, I like this kind of training. So I don't know, maybe one day, but not now. You know, I'm good with this training now.
I wanted to ask you, Patrick, your thoughts on the Travis Luter Anderson Silva fight, having fought Travis and being on the same Ultimate Fighter season with him. It kind of seemed like to Brendan and I, Patrick, that before the fight, Travis looked somewhat dejected. It almost looked like when he's coming to the ring, maybe it wasn't exactly himself. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think that the fact it wasn't for a title fight, that he didn't make weight, maybe affected his performance on Saturday night?
I think he was pretty tired, you know, because he tried to cut more weight a lot, you know, because Thursday night I spoke to him and he was at 205 Thursday night. So that, I was like, man, are you sure you will be able to make weight?
And he said, yeah, probably. One day before the weigh-in?
Wow.
No, Wednesday, sorry, not Thursday, Wednesday. So he was at 204, you know, and he was big, you know, and, you know, he missed the win when I fought him the first time too. So, it's not good for your, you know, your reputation if you miss weight twice, especially if you miss weight for the title fight. You know, it's not very good, but, you know, like I said, he was maybe tired, you know, he shaved his head to lose weight too, so at the end he was a little bit desperate to make weight.
I thought that was to make his head slippery to avoid the tie clinch.
Yeah, maybe, but it's not the reason that a lot of people gave me. So.
Well, I mean, I guess in some ways then that some of the answers about Anderson Silva's ground game maybe aren't fully answered. To me, he looked great, but Travis, yeah, didn't really look like he was himself. How would you grade Anderson Silva's performance, Patrick?
You know, Anderson is a very, very dangerous fighter. You know, each time he hit you, it will hurt you for sure. His Muay Thai is sick, you know, but, you know, you saw that Travis has a very, very good jiu-jitsu in the first round. Mm-hmm. You know, Anderson is a black belt too, but it's not the same kind of black belt, you know. In the second round, you know, he captured the triangle, but, you know, in my opinion, you know, I think that the elbow was illegal, but he catch the triangle, that was very, very tight. So, I think that Anderson would be dangerous for each fighter who is going to try to take his belt.
Yeah, so you thought that Anderson's elbows from, you know, with Travis caught in the triangle were too much from the point of the elbow rather than across.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit more about that rule, Patrick?
You know, if you want to land the elbow, you have to do like a circle, you know. You can't go straight, you know. So, and that's when those elbow was straight, you know, with the with the elbow right away, not with the forearm. So this is
so like an elbow, but, like an elbow smash is illegal.
Yeah, exactly. So, but this, you know, this is a discretion of the referee too. You know, but you know, it's, a lot of people think then those elbow was illegal. So I don't know.
Well, just a couple more quick questions for you, Patrick. Just there's some other big middleweight fights coming up, and we'd just love to hear your thoughts on them. First one, David Loazo versus Joey Villasenor this weekend. How do you see that fight, Patrick?
You know, I know that Loazo now he trained in San Diego. You know, with a very good guy. You know, I don't want to say the team because just in case of if Villasenor is going to hear this. This interview, but you know, I know that David will be ready for that, and that will be pretty sure a very good fight, you know.
And Yushin Okami and Mike Swick, it looks like that fight's going to happen on the same night that George is scheduled to fight Matt Serra. That fight could have implications for not only yourself as a possible future fight, Patrick, but even for in the title picture, Mike Swick versus Yushin Okami. Who do you see coming out of that?
And Mike Swick is good, but you know, I want to fight this guy. You know, I think I have a very good style to fight this guy and to beat this guy. You know, it's not he don't hit very hard. You know, when you fought Loazo, you know, Loazo was lucky than Mike don't hit very hard because you know he was in trouble a couple of times. But you know, Mike Swick is a very good fighter. You know, no doubt in my mind, but I'm pretty sure he's a. He has a perfect style for me, you know, that I can beat for sure.
And so you think he's probably going to beat Okami?
I think so, too. That would be very hard. But, you know, Swig is, each time you think that he's going to lose, he always finds a way to win. So I think I'll put my money on Swig on this one.
Any chance that you think the UFC might put you in against Caleb Starnes, and another fellow Canadian who also defeated Jason McDonald?
I don't know, you know. You know, I don't care. You know, now I don't have a lot of control about my situation of the UFC to choosing my opponent, something like that. So I'll fight everybody who's the UFC is going to put in front of me. So I don't care.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, last time you were on the show, buddy, you disappointed us. You said you were going to get the Côté, Côté, Côté. You're going to get that song recorded for your entrance music. What happened?
I won't say, but you know, it was a little bit. I didn't find too much people to sing the song. that's why it was. I didn't have all the orchestra or something like that. So no, just kidding. But you know, when at the weigh-in, there's a lot of people who was singing the Côté, Côté. You know, I was surprised. So it was good.
Nice.
Are you trying to tell me that you can't find a rowdy gang of soccer hooligans in Montreal to chant your name?
yeah, but you know, to be honest with you, I didn't very search, you know, I was more focused on my training for this one.
Well, Stefan Patry, I mean, your manager, he should get on that. You could sell CDs, Patrick, some autographed CDs with the Côté, Côté song.
I want that as my ringtone.
Yeah. Well, Patrick, thanks again for coming on the show, and congrats about the big win, and all the best in the future.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
Congratulations, Patrick.
Thank you.
They fight for different things. For some, it's for fame. For others, it's a job. Some fighters just like to hurt people. Visit BodogFight.com and see who the fighters are and why winning matters to them. They'll have a chance to win, but only if that next round matters more than anything. View highlights, read fighter bios, watch TV episodes, or see when the next live event is. Don't miss any mixed martial arts action. BodogFight.com. Make it matter.
The best coverage of the toughest fighters in the toughest sport can only be found in Full Contact Fighter. For over a decade now, FCF has been bringing mixed martial arts fans across the globe in-depth reporting of the world's greatest sport. From Brazil, Japan, Europe, Canada, and the U.S., FCF brings you all the fighter bios, event reports, training and technique tips any avid MMA fan would want. Every month, 12 times a year, we do it. Full Contact Fighter is your best source for MMA coverage. Pick up the latest edition of the paper by subscribing at www.fcfighter.com or call 516-676-0033. Again, the number 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world, and when you call, tell them that FCF Radio sent you.
Hey, this is Mac Danzig, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Joining Full Contact Fighter Radio now is Nate Marquardt, who's coming off a huge win over Dean Lister last week at the Ultimate Fight Night. Nathan, how are you doing this afternoon?
Oh, good, thanks.
Nate, my first question for you, and before we get into the specifics of the fight, and it was a very impressive performance on your part. What did you think when you found out that the fight wasn't going to be actually shown on the broadcast, that people were going to have to watch it on UFC On Demand or something like that? Were you shocked by that?
Yeah, and, you know, a little disappointed, but that's the way it goes.
Yeah. I think a lot of people kind of, when this fight was announced, I think most people just kind of assumed that it would be on the main card, or at least I think the avid MMA fans certainly hope for that, and I watched it on UFC On Demand, which I've always kind of end up plugging on the show, but I guess just going in for your game plan, Nate, were you planning on just keeping it standing? I know you probably felt like you were comfortable against Dean on the ground, but that, I'm assuming that was the game plan going in against Dean?
Yeah, definitely. Even there's a few points in the fight where like you said, I felt very comfortable on the ground with him, and I felt like I wanted to attack him even on the ground. But when I started, my coaches were yelling at me to stand back up, so I had to listen to them. So.
Yes.
Can you walk us a little bit through the fight? I'm sure many of the listeners haven't actually seen the fight. Can you give us a brief description of how you saw it go down?
Yeah. So. Basically, you know, we started off, I caught him with a few punches, and he pretty much immediately shot in, and throughout the fight, he would shoot and kind of pull guard or pull half guard, and the first couple times, you know, I stopped his shot and landed up in half guard, and was just kind of actually stalling the first couple times. And then after that, every time he would pull guard, I would try to, you know, punch and get back up. And then I think I knocked him down about six times throughout the fight, about four with punches and twice with knees. And, you know, I came close a couple of times to finishing him, but he's very tough and wasn't going to give up, so.
Were you excited when you found out that you got to fight Dean Lister or were you a little bit disappointed in terms of the style of fighter he is? I just recall back to one of the first fights I ever saw of his against Ricardo Arona. He made Arona look like a very average fighter. So for someone who is trying to build a career as an exciting fighter in the UFC, was that a little disappointing to you? Were you worried about that?
No, not at all, actually. To be honest, we asked for that fight because we knew he had a pretty big name, and we kind of figured that would be a good fight to put me in title contention, so we asked for that fight, and then you know, after I fought Crafton Wallace, we got it, so.
Well, when you look at your wins now in the UFC, you've defeated some pretty notable fighters, Joe Dirksen, of course, Ivan Salivary, and now Dean Lister. Where would you put the win over Dean as far as your UFC experience so far, Nate? Is that right up there as far as, like you just mentioned, making a name for yourself in North America?
Yeah, definitely. I think him and Ivan Salivary had the biggest names that I've fought in the UFC so far. So, he's definitely just as tough as anyone in the UFC. So.
Well, speaking of big names, Nate, you've actually had two wins over Nazuo Misaki, the winner of the Pride welterweight Grand Prix there, middleweight Grand Prix this year. What are your reflections about his success now? And do you think how has he improved? Is he the same, similar fighter, the same fighter to the fighter that you fought just a year ago or a couple of years ago? Or has he now sort of done something to propel himself to the upper echelons?
You know, I always knew he was a tough fighter. I fought him, you know, like twice, and both times I had trained with him at least, you know, a year prior to our fight, and I knew he was a great grappler, a great striker,
great takedowns. He's very well-rounded, very strong physically. And the main thing is he's very strong mentally, just will not give up and will not accept defeat. And I knew he was going to do well even after I beat him the second time. It doesn't surprise me at all. I'm sure he's improved just like I have. But he's always been a great fighter, so.
And you broke his arm?
Yeah, our first fight, ended in, I think, about 20 seconds. We had an exchange and then we went into a clinch and he tried to take me down with, let's see, it's in Japanese, it's called Kosodogari. It's like an outside leg trip. And, as he was taking me down, I just reversed it and turned it into Uchimata, which is like a, kind of like a hip throw. Mm-hmm. So I kind of pulled him up on me and turned. And as I was turning, his back was turning towards the ground at that point, and he stuck his arm out thinking he could post out and land on top. And when his arm hit, I just rolled right over it, and his arm ended up kind of backwards underneath his body. So yeah. It's kind of a freak thing. But, you know, our second fight was really good, and that was probably more of a true fight to me.
And I wanted to ask you a little bit about that, Nate. Obviously well-decorated, king of pancreas, fought overseas for quite some time. Looking back on that now, did you ever think, Nate, when you're in Japan and having that success, that you'd be able to come back to North America and the sport of mixed martial arts would be where it's at now in the States?
It was always a dream and kind of a hope of mine, but I never expected it. I can never say I expected it. You know, I always hoped it and believed in it, but, you know, I didn't know it was going to happen, so.
Well, and you know, a lot of people make, at least over here in North America, there's a lot of discussion and speculation about the future of Pride and what that means for their organization. But really, that has no bearing on how much mixed martial arts is part of Japanese sports culture over there. So maybe for the listeners, just tell us a little bit about that. I know from talking to other fighters who have competed in Shooto, competed in Pancrase, and it, there still is quite a difference, isn't there? I mean, is it not much, just so much more part of regular sports culture over there still?
Yeah, it is. You'll see it in all their sports magazines and in the sports section of the newspaper, and, you know, even on the sports section of the news on TV. Whereas here it's more like a specialized kind of a, you know, it's not quite mainstream yet as far as that goes, as far as the media goes. And I think it's just always been a part of their culture. The martial arts have been always a part of their culture because, you know, they have kids grow up in arts like karate and judo, and they have, you know, judo in the high schools and things like that. So it's a little different culture.
Yeah. Nate, following up that question, another fighter who you've actually lost to, Genki Sudo, has announced his retirement. Did that surprise you when you heard that? What do you think about that? And is there any possibility of you inheriting his dance troupe and busting out some sweet performances before you fight?
No, I kind of doubt that. But actually, that didn't really surprise me. I knew. Because when I was over in Japan, I trained with him quite a bit, and he always told me he wanted to be a talent, which is, you know, just like someone that sings and dances and is on TV and acts and things like that. So it didn't surprise me at all.
Nate, going back a little bit into your own career, you know, we talked about the big win over Dean and putting you into title contention, and we had Patrick Cote on the show as well, and there's a lot of discussion about what is going to be coming up as far as future title shots for Anderson Silva, etc. Who do you think, or who would you like to fight next, Nate, that you think would get you a title shot with Anderson Silva?
Who do I think what?
Who would you like to fight, or who do you think that there's a possibility the UFC might match you up against next?
My hopes is Anderson Silva. I think I've already proven myself as the number one contender, and you know, I think I'm at the point where if I fought any more contenders, that you know, when I get the title, I won't have anyone to fight. So I think I think my time is now, but I obviously can't say for sure until it's official. So.
And what were your thoughts on his performance against Travis Luter last weekend?
He did great. He showed a couple holes, but I think maybe Travis came out a little bit amped up, maybe, or he probably felt pretty strong at first, but you can't fight at that pace for too long. So I think he showed that he's great on his feet, and he showed that he's great on the ground. So yeah, so I was impressed.
Yeah.
Neat. Kelsey and I were talking to Jay McDonald over the weekend, who mentioned that he had been training down with you guys. What are your thoughts on Jay's progress as a fighter, and what are your thoughts on his chances against Rich Franklin?
Well, of course, I think he has a great chance now that he's trained with us. So, he's going to progress a lot, and I think he has a great chance. And I'm looking forward to that fight.
Maybe tell us a little bit about your experiences going over and also training with Greg Jackson. Of course, you've got your own instructor academy at High Altitude Martial Arts. What was the process with you heading to train with Greg Jackson and the rest of the guys down there in New Mexico, Nate?
The process, basically, I met Keith and Greg over in Japan, and we fought on the same card, and I think about a year later, I was at a point where I knew I had to make some kind of change as far as I needed a bigger and stronger sparring partners. And, I didn't really know who they all were down there, so I went down there and trained for a week with them, and I was just blown away, and the way they treated me, they were like so friendly and so welcoming and so generous to me that I knew that was my new home.
What can you explain exactly? We've talked to almost everyone from that stable of fighters, including Jackson himself, numerous times now. Can you explain to me what goes into the water there? Is there some kind of Prozac or something like that that goes to the water in Albuquerque? Why is everyone so pleasant?
Yeah, I think it's probably, it's great. A lot of it's Greg. He just attracts those kind of people. He attracts very nice, humble, generous people. And I think that's one of the things that makes our team so great, is that we're all there trying to help each other, not trying to just help ourselves. We're trying to help each other. We're training year round, even if we don't have fights, to help, our partners for their fights. And I think that's one of the biggest. We're like brothers down there. So
yeah, it seems like every time Rashad Evans fights now, Nate, it just sets the whole MMA world ablaze with discussion. And what is this guy's potential? I mean, how good is Rashad going to get? It just seems, like I said, every fight he seems to get better and introduce a new technique, a new side to him that people didn't expect. Do you think that he could challenge for the title right now, Nate, and win the title, possibly?
Oh, I believe he could right now, but, I believe he's going to get even better. I mean, he's great right now. He's so strong. He's athletic. He's very technical. But he's even going to improve. I mean, he's going to be so much better in a year and another year after that. I mean, it's just going to be unreal. And I think, just like you said, he's surprised the MMA world with what he can do. So, like I said, I think you beat Chuck right now. But in a year and 2 years after that, I mean, he's going to be unstoppable.
So at 205, then, who's the next virgin from the Jackson camp to be thrown into the Iceman, the volcano that is the Iceman?
Who's the what?
Who's the next Vestal Virgin to be thrown into the Iceman? There seems to be a bunch of young fighters sort of in at the same position in the UFC at 205, and then there's sort of Chuck. So who's the next one to get thrown forward?
I think that's going to be more up to the UFC. We're not really in the position to choose who is going to get the title fight, but both Keith and Rashad definitely could do it and eventually will do it, so.
And then it was just recently announced that Diego Sanchez, another one of your training partners, is going to be fighting Josh Koscheck. And I think a lot of people are interested about that fight to see it again. What are your thoughts on that fight, Nate? I mean, I know, of course, you're going to go with Diego, but do you think Josh is the kind of fighter that can give Diego some problems as far as his wrestling capabilities?
Not really, because, no. To be honest, he falls right into Diego's style. His style is perfect for Diego. Diego's gotten so much better on his feet, and he's a very explosive fighter on his feet. Like he hits very hard. I mean, I think, and then on the ground, obviously, that's always been his game. So even if he does get taken down, you know, he puts Koscheck in a bad situation there. So, you know, I think it's probably going to be even better for Diego this time.
Oh, okay.
Do you expect that after GSP and Diego finally square off, that there'll be a continued presence of fighters of GSP in your camp?
Definitely, most definitely, yeah.
Well, Nate, we appreciate coming on the show. Best of luck in the future, and congrats on the big win. And yeah, for those people who didn't see the fight, it was a very impressive performance. And hopefully, they show it on Spike TV, or people should just check it out on UFC On Demand, because it was definitely a great fight, an intriguing fight to watch. So congrats, Nate.
Oh, thanks a lot. Do you guys know that I heard that on Spike TV tonight they're playing one of my fights. Do you know which one it is?
No, I don't offhand, no.
Okay.
Brendan, do you know?
I haven't heard. No, I haven't heard at all.
Yeah, I heard two stories. I heard that it's going to be the Ultimate Fight Night 1 replay, or it might be my last fight, so I'm not sure.
Well, that'd be great if they showed the recent fight already. That'd be great for people to check it out. So.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Yeah. I'll tease it for you, Nate.
Okay.
I'll table it for you if you're busy running around in the mountains in the snow.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks a lot.
Nate Marquardt, okay. Thanks again, and take care.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks a lot.
Hey guys, Kelsey Mode here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moe must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moe before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and Brendan, had the pleasure of watching the fights at your place, watch the replay Sunday morning, because of course we were covering the MFC on Saturday night. And I gotta say, Saturday night, you know, we didn't want the results to be spoiled for us, and we managed to get through that evening without anyone calling us on our cell phones or whatnot, telling us the results of the fights. We got to be, I guess, somewhat surprised the next morning watching, which is kind of nice.
And it's been a long time since we watched the UFC together, at least a couple of years.
Yeah, well, you had your usual group of clowns there ruining it for me, so thanks a lot. And I know some of you guys are listening, so.
Since Kelsey's become an MMA journalist, he requires a lot of silence in between to hear to hang on Joe Rogan's every word.
That's right.
His expert analysis, and doesn't appreciate any chit chat or commentary in between the fights.
That's true. I don't. But
that was a successful trip. Successful trip to Edmonton. So I got to see some good fights at the MFC.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting to see some mainstream media there and covering the, of course, on the MFC. For people who don't know, there was two Edmonton Eskimo football players competing on it, players from the Canadian Football League, and Mike Maurer, of course, he lost, and Adam Braidwood won, so there was, I guess, some disappointment and some reason for celebration for the hometown fans, and it was interesting to see the amount of media there. Brendan, what was your sense? I had a chance on Sunday and Monday to read a little bit of the local print media as far as their coverage with the card. What was your sense of the media in Edmonton and the MFC? Is there some growing acceptance coming there, or not so much?
Well, I think it's becoming better and better. It's no longer, if you got a story before, it was cage fighting brings peril, or some, you know, something like that, some sensationalistic headline. And now it's actually, you know, much a lot of the reporting's done by sports reporters, except for the woman who's sitting beside you. I don't know what kind of reporter she was. What did she say? What were her comments to you? I can't remember exactly.
Oh, she was a nice enough person. She just, and I won't say what network. She was there covering the fights, or doing a story for a network, and I won't bother to say what network. But she just didn't understand what had happened. A fight had ended quickly by a guillotine choke, and she was quite alarmed that there was choking allowed in the sport. And she couldn't believe that. Also, I thought there was some good and positive. There was some positive and somewhat negative coverage, I felt, from reading some of the coverage of the fights. In one sense, there's some positive reflections on the fight, but then there were some other comments that I read in some of the mainstream media which kind of annoyed me. There, one of the fights, I think it was Nigel Zettergreen's fight against Matakowski, was referred to a bloodbath, and I don't there was certainly some blood, but I think people sense, or people who weren't familiar with the sport might have thought of that, because they seemed to take they cleaned the ring with so much effort that there was quite some delay, but after, in between rounds, you remember that, Brendan? But there wasn't even that much blood, and there was one publication in Edmonton which called that an absolute bloodbath or something to that effect, which I...
It was about as much blood as you expect from, you know, butchering a gerbil.
Yeah, there wasn't much at all. And then there was another article. There was one that was quite positive about the MFC, and it seemed like it kind of turned the writer's mindset in favor of mixed martial arts. And then there was a couple other comments, though, that I read from a different writer who referred to it as legalized barroom brawling, and it didn't matter if it was legalized to him, it still was barroom brawling, which I thought, you know, was not really a very well-informed statement. Of course, you know, the MFC is great, it's a great promotion. It doesn't necessarily have the Matt Lindlands and Yoshidas of the world who've competed in the Olympics at their cards, but, I mean, they had Ryan Jimmo, who's a very well-accomplished karate practitioner. You know, not to also give credit to all the other athletes who competed on it, but certainly I think it's suffice to say that they are far, far more evolved and trained and athletic than two drunken clowns going at it in a bar.
Yeah, I know, but you know, if you got to put it in the proper perspective, in that if you open up any piece of mainstream journalism, you know, if you're a person of even low to moderate intelligence, your intelligence should be offended, because typically mainstream journalism is offensive in its very nature. So you'd expect nothing else in the covering of MMA.
Yeah.
But there was actually, you know, I think right beside me, I was taking some photographs, and there was a live play-by-play going on one of the local radio stations. So, you know, that's not even coverage anymore, but that's a form of participation, and that was remarkable. And actually, I never expected to see that before.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see where the MFC goes from here, as far as, I mean, they're very well established in Central Alberta for doing cards. They stopped doing promotions for a little while and started back recently, and they've done very well. It's a very well-polished event. You get in, you really get the sense that there's some money behind it, that there's some community involvement, and I thought that's what was nice, is some of the fights are sponsored by local business, and there is a Lifetime Achievement Award given to Max Marin, who's an instructor out of Calgary. And for a lot of people who aren't really well familiar with MMA community, some of that might have been above their heads, but I think it does a long ways to make it seem like, you know, the sport is actually forming some solid roots in Alberta.
And I think a lot of that is, a lot of that is the pure perception as well. When you walk into the venue, it's clean, it's not particularly rowdy, there's not a bunch of drunken idiots rolling around. Although you could drink there, you could buy drinks there. It wasn't, it didn't factor in as one of the, central things that you go to the fights for. The crowd to me was remarkably attuned to what was going on in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, compared to watching the UFC the next day, it was like comparing a Japanese crowd to an American crowd. I thought,
very patient.
Yeah, there was no booing. There was a lot of appreciation for sweeps and things like that on the ground. And I think that's one of the things that's going to propel MMA into the, I hate to say the mainstream, but propel MMA into a state where it's more acceptable by mainstream media and coverable And you see that with production values that you find in watching an IFL show, for instance, or, you know, even the UFC is still a little bit cheesy in comparison, but if you compare an IFL production to, like, a King of the Cage production, you know, King of the Cage, most of their shows look like they're shot in the mid, you know, in the early 90s when the first UFCs and the same kind of sensationalism and I think the more professional sports polished productions are going to be the ones that push MMA into the mainstream because they look like they're done, you know, with people who understand what they're doing when they produce television programs or when they produce live events, and you kind of appreciate that because it denotes a certain care and effort that's taken to polish off the edges rather than, you know, let's just get a couple guys build a ring out of some crates and canvas and get a couple guys to slug it out in some, you know, cheesy bar somewhere.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I think now that the promotion of MMA has become a business, I think you'll see a lot the quality of it and the perception of it just raise. And I'm not saying that it's inherently any better or any worse, but I think that perception is everything when it comes to the media. So
well,
I think that's the big difference.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the UFC because you mentioned it's one last thing I wanted to quickly say about the UFC is that Victor Valimaki, if people hadn't heard, defended his UFC light heavyweight title against Jerry Kilkenny that night. So it looks like he'll probably be back in the UFC for a second fight. So I wanted to mention that as well. But yeah, let's talk about the UFC, Brendan. I guess not too many surprises on that night. For myself, I thought one of the bigger surprises for me might have, in fact, been Anderson Silva. I was very impressed with his performance, of course. A lot of people, the detractors, are going to say, well, what was Travis Luter's mindset? Was he exhausted or not? All those things. But I think a lot of credit has to be given to Anderson Silva. There were some questions about his ground game. And I think he answered at least a fair amount of those questions against Luter.
Yeah, I think, you know, everyone came through with the thought of how Luter breezed through Cote and that he would be just a monster on the ground and that how his jiu-jitsu was just in a different class than Anderson Silva's. And I think Anderson Silva answered a lot of those. You know, and it's true that Luter did take him down, but Anderson Silva could, you know, displayed the kind of composure that we would hope to expect from him. So he was mounted for a time, and Luter was raining down blows. But that wasn't, you know, that was certainly didn't at any time look anxious or panicked, and swept Luter out of the mount. So, you know, I think when you're comparing jiu-jitsu fighters, there's so many different variables to say who's a different level, a different class of jiu-jitsu fighter. And this is MMA, you know, it's not pure Brazilian jiu-jitsu. They're not wearing a gi, you know, and they're not competing under a different set of rules. So I think it was always a lot of hyperbole, you know, saying that they were completely different classes of fighters because, you know, it's certainly the Nogueira brothers are no slouches, and if they awarded Anderson Silva a black belt, then they did it for a reason, not because they were trying to promote him or pull sunshine up his ass, I'm sure.
Well, and I think this is probably a good result for the UFC, and I don't want to take anything away from Travis Luter. He's a great, it seems like a great guy. Been on the show, very talented fighter, and I think certainly they could have had something marketable with Travis, but I think with Anderson Silva to win now, this is a couple wins in a row. His first, well, I guess it wasn't actually a title defense, but you know, essentially he's won a fight now with being middleweight champion. And certainly now they've got someone that they can start to really build up and market. And I think the middleweight division now, looking ahead, there's a lot of intriguing matchups that are their possibilities.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's fairly wide open, and there's lots of interesting combinations of different fighters they can put in there. And I think we'll need a couple more fights to see exactly what the lie of the land is. You know, obviously the McDonald Franklin fight will be one of those, and then maybe the next Swick fight as well. But sure, there's lots of different interesting combinations that you could throw up against Silva, and there's a lot of fighters that who may not definitely take out Silva, but will undoubtedly provide him great competition and great looking fights. And it was nice to see you know in that production, because Kelsey and I couldn't see the UFC live. Full Contact Fighter paid for its own producer to go and shoot the show, and really nice production. It was nice to see some professional commentators being brought in for our benefit.
Yeah.
They really pulled out all the stops.
I don't know what you're talking about anymore. You've lost me.
When the full contact fighter helicopter landed in my backyard, actually, one of the rotors took out my neighbor's fence, so he's pretty pissed off about that. But otherwise, it was a full-out, pure-class weekend on the full contact fighter corporate card. It was great.
Right. Quinton Jackson, Brendan, what were your thoughts on his performance? For me, I wasn't shocked by anything. And it's interesting now to see where he might end up. I guess it sounds like Dana White has been saying that Quinton Jackson probably will have another fight at least before throwing up against Chuck, or maybe two. But with Krokop, he also said that maybe only one more fight before he gets a title shot. I thought that was interesting.
Well, I think people, would put up with the Sanchez fight. Even the most critical, pessimistic fans like yourself, still weren't, overly criticizing the Sanchez fight because it was an introduction of Krokop. But now he's introduced, he's got to fight some legitimate guys. So I guess the only question for me is, do they have him take out Arlovski before he fights Sylvia, or is Arlovski his first challenger after he fights Sylvia? And that's really the only, for me, that's the only two combinations that I can see of the two options that they have.
Well, unless they decide to go like a Czech Congo or a Tony Hardunk, something like that.
I think that would be, there would be a far more outcry from that. And really, they've got him for six fights, right? So do they want to waste someone who's obviously not a fighter of his caliber on one of these fights? It costs a lot of money to get him to fight. I think, what did he make, $350,000?
Yeah,
so well, it's not
Arlovski,
like,
definitely there's some marketing. If they were to go with Arlovski, there's no question that that would be a fight that a lot of people would be eager to watch.
Yeah, I got to think that would be his defense. For him. Because he is going to fight one more time before Sylvia. You know, so he's fighting in April in England, and then it's going to be Sylvia. So you don't think
it'll be Arlovski next? You think it...
I don't know. I guess that's up to them, but I think the next fighter has to be a legitimate heavyweight, and someone meaningful for him to be. I wouldn't be surprised if it was Herring, actually.
Yeah, I think I'd be kind of surprised by that. But
yeah, I don't know. Maybe they're depends how mad they are. They are at Herring still for that first fight.
Yeah. Well, and I think, it depends on his, I don't think, the comments I've read is that with the injury and the fact that he kept trying to stop the fight, end the fight, I think he won some points with Dana there from at least the comments I've read. But
yeah.
And then with Quinton Jackson, like I said earlier, no big surprises there. I thought he looked pretty good. He did look somewhat nervous, and he admitted to that afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So it's interesting to see where they go from here then. And any possibilities when you look around the light heavyweight division for Quinton Jackson's next fight?
Well, I don't think they've got Quinton Jackson tied down to a lot of fights. As a matter of fact, I think his contract is up right away. But I think it's going to be, like I said, when we were watching the show, I think I said that Quinton Jackson is potentially their most valuable commodity, bar no other fighter, because he is a really marketable persona. And look how popular Chuck is, and he has. No offense to Chuck, but he's not an entertainer. He's a fighter, right?
Yeah.
He's like some super tough dude who loves heavy metal. But Quinton Jackson is a promoter's wildest dream, really. So if they can bring him along and have him fight legitimate fighters and build up that one big fight, even if he loses, he's still such a natural commodity, just as a person, and he's so eminently promotable that I think they'll have him in there for a long time.
Well, even if you look at your place, when we were watching it, there was a few people there who weren't familiar with him. I mean, immediately, Brendan, they weren't even MMA fans. A couple of people there, and then immediately they were drawn to what he was saying and who's that guy, and he's hilarious.
Yeah, I think so. It's tough to argue. It's tough to argue that there's a more marketable fighter than Jackson. And he was, he was a steal for them. And I think as long as they build him carefully, and he's one of those fighters who, in a sense, you have an insurance policy as well with Jackson, because you build him up, and even if he loses to Chuck Liddell, he's still a marketable commodity. You know, he's like uh, he's very much like Tito, and people just love to sort of see him. But he's Tito to the umpteenth degree, right? He's like Chuck D from Public Enemy compared to Vanilla Ice. So
well, I
if they thought Tito was the bad boy, you know, was the bad boy. Just
I'm not so sure if I agree with that 100%. I mean, I agree with you. Currently, Jackson's in that state, but I think we all sort of saw it in Pride. I think some of his charisma sort of evaporated a little bit in his interviews, etc. because of some of his losses.
I think the Japanese audience didn't even. I don't even think the Japanese audience appreciated, you know, 90% of the nuance that comes with Quentin Jackson.
I'm not saying
he's a profound nuanced character, but you know, I think there's more potential appreciation for his character in the States, you know.
Yeah, granted, but I'm not talking about the audience response. I'm just talking about, if you remember, the way he did the interviews and the comments he would make seemed to get a little bit more docile after the performance against Ninja, after his second loss to Vanderlei Silva. Some of his brashness sort of disappeared a little bit, which is, you know, I think anyone would come that way. That's all I'm saying.
He took two of the most horrific beatdowns of MMA history, you know, especially the last one. So I think he was unhappy there, and I think he was unhappy for a lot of personal reasons and unhappy for a lot of professional reasons, but. You know, a happy rampage is good news for everyone.
Yeah. Well, so you didn't really answer part of my question, though. Let's throw out some names before we get off the air here. Let's throw out some names. Who do you think are some possibilities for him in the second fight?
That's a good question, because they'd want to show him again in a little bit of demonstrating his stand-up capabilities a little bit more when he's a little bit more relaxed. So I'm thinking someone who likes to stand and trade with him. Maybe someone like Forrest.
Yeah.
And that might be a fairly dangerous fight for him, but I think it's definitely a doable fight for him. And like I said, they don't have to worry so much about Quentin drawing or even losing a fight, as long as he fights well.
Well, I think that you can probably expect there to be two more fights before he gets a title shot.
Yeah, I think so.
So I think the first opponent, you might see someone sort of like a veteran kind of fighter, maybe even someone like a Renato Sobral, depending on how he does against Jason Lambert, who certainly, I think, would give Quinton some difficulties. But I think this next fight, you might see someone sort of the Marvin Eastman vein as far as being a veteran fighter, but not someone who Quinton would be favored. And then I think in the third fight, really to give him... If they really want to try to attach some legitimacy to his fight with Chuck, outside the fact that he beat Chuck before, you would think that maybe he could wind up against someone like a Keith Jardine or something like that, and to really prove his worth for a title shot.
Yeah, I don't think that wouldn't surprise me at all. But I see that being the second step. I don't see them bringing in anyone from outside of the chosen few at light heavyweight. So I don't see anyone like Marvin Eastman coming in to fight him. I think it's going to be someone from within. Well established within the organization.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see, and I think it will also be really interesting to see who they match up against Rashad Evans next. You would also think that they've got to throw him up against someone quite notable. I mean, at this point, you just can't see them going Rashad Evans, Quinton Jackson. I think that would just remove a great marquee title shot, something that would be very marketable against Chuck.
And I think someone's going to have to step up and bite the bullet and fight Chuck out of those young, up-and-coming guys. You know, whether it's Forrest or whether it's Rashad or whether it's Keith Jardine, I think one of those guys is going to have to bite it and step up and take the beating with the understanding that, you know, when you were 25 or 26 years old, you were beaten by the best, and you know, and you can, you know, you're not going to lose your position in the UFC, and you're not going to lose your job.
What about Rashad Evans versus Tito Ortiz?
That would be a good fight, but I would be surprised if Tito took that fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tito's you would think is somewhat backed into a corner now. No, I mean he has to sort of, in a sense, he has to fight someone next that he's going to be the underdog. I think to really catch it, to make waves, he needs to have sort of an upset victory. No,
Well, I don't know. I think Tito could. You know, you could argue that Tito could build himself back up slowly over three or four fights again, because, you know, I think he's happy with the money he's cash grab fights anymore. So he could build himself back up, and maybe that would be the best thing for him to do, because if Tito loses a big fight where he's the underdog again, then where is he to go? So I think he's got to win. I think he's got to win his next fight.
No, I agree. I just can't see there being a great deal of interest if it were, say, Tito against someone that the fans were hardly familiar with.
I thought Tito Forrest 2 was set to go. I thought that was a done deal.
Oh, no, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that would make a lot of sense to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably just a rumor, though, isn't it?
I think most of the statements that come out of my mouth are fairly consistently rumors. So I don't even know where I hear these things anymore. I just heard it.
Yeah, right. Well, that's the key thing to say. Heard. Yeah, I heard that global warming's a myth. Did you hear that?
I heard that UFC bought Pride, and it's Hicks and Sakuraba. The first fight.
Right. Well, take it to the bank, everybody. You heard it here first. On that note, Brendan, we'll talk to you later in the week, and take care of yourself in freezing Edmonton.
Well, it's beautiful here now, Kelsey.
No, it's not. I thought it was like minus 25.
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful here. You wouldn't believe it.
What's the temperature?
I don't know. The temperature on my computer is somehow in Fahrenheit, and I don't know what that means. Does that make sense to you? I have an American computer, and it only tells me the temperature outside in Fahrenheit. Like minus 5 Fahrenheit, whatever that is.
Yeah,
is that cold?
That's like minus 30 almost, I think.
No.
That's cold, man. Minus 5
nice.
Fahrenheit.
It's not too bad. It's nice. It's refreshing. It's brisk.
All right.
Nothing like when you go outside and your entire face tightens up as if you're James Bond, and someone's turned on the spinning astronaut trainer, and your face kind of tightens up as if you're suffering from 10 G's.
Well, I think I'd rather have that than being under the heightened earthquake alertness that we're in right now in Vancouver. So I think I'd rather have the cold weather.
But you got your patchouli back, and that's all that matters.
Right.
You're on the mend. You can go out tomorrow and buy yourself a new hemp poncho, and all will be right with the world.
Yeah, okay. I'm too tired and sick to throw out any barbs your way, so let's just end this now.
As soon as that beef passes your colon, I'm sure you'll be on the mend.
Yeah, probably.
It's not easy to digest, if you've been eating granola for the last 2 years, it's not easy to digest like a 4-pound steak. So
it's true.
I understand. I empathize with you.
Yeah, I appreciate your understanding. All right, talk to you later in the week, buddy.
Adios, muchacho.